This episode is brought to you by CEP Compression Australia. CEP Compression brings the user more energy, greater endurance, and enhanced performance during activities. For a discount at CEP, use the following code online, local legends in running. Welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast, where you hear the stories from local legends in the Australian running community you've simply always wanted to hear. Today in Season 3, Episode 66, I talk with Brisbane and currently American runner Matt Hanson, a.k.a. Hanso. This was Hanso's second time on the podcast. We spoke back in 2023 around March from memory, and at that time he was running with New Orleans, and now he's with Lipscomb, and we discussed all things running as he sat in Nashville, Tennessee. Hanso is just a wealth of knowledge. For someone so young at 20 years of age, it just felt like I was talking to someone in their mid-30s, and he's just so passionate about the sport too, and it just comes off in the way that he talks. He's a real learner in the sense that he's just always trying to improve and get better and better through reading, listening to podcasts, and just viewing the sport. It's all he thinks about. He's in university, no family, and running is his life. So it's always a pleasure talking to Hanso, and I hope you enjoy hearing the side of Hanso that maybe on social media with all these comedics that you don't often see and hear, and I hope you enjoy. Cheers. So, mate, well, for the second time, welcome back, Matthew Hanson, to the Local Legends in Running podcast.
Thanks for having me again. A lot's changed since we first spoke. Kind of gone from, I was definitely a good runner, and I'm a slightly better runner than I once was. Hopefully my points and my stories are a little bit more valid than it once was.
I completely agree, mates. Last time we spoke, I think, was around March from memory. This is last year, so 2023. I think you were overseas. Am I correct in saying you were in America at that time of that conversation?
Yeah, I was. It was the start of my first semester in college at the University of New Orleans. I was still a good runner. I think I just run 8:27 for a 3K in my first race over there.
Yeah, right. And I'm Adam and I run the Brisbane Roadrunners event that morning, and we're talking about it because you've run a few Roadrunners events in your time there in Brisbane from West End, and I believe you got some kind of record from memory. Have got that correct? Is that right? For some age group?
Yeah. I would have the 5 mile and the 10 mile age group record for 0 to 19 years. I think that year, 2022, I was one event off potentially winning the Roadrunners Championship, which would have been probably my most prestigious running achievement if I'd achieved that.
Oh, mate, the Roadrunners organization would really appreciate those words for sure, putting it up there But it is a great event. But yeah, let's move along, mate. This is almost the third time lucky, so to speak, to get a hold of you. I think you knocked me back twice for, I think you were partying, weren't you, post some event?
Yeah, so went up to drove up to Madison, Wisconsin to watch the NCAA cross country. That was over the weekend, and was lucky enough to know a few of the Australian lads who go to Wisconsin, Archie Noakes, and was lucky enough to get an invite to the post nationals party, which was good fun.
Yeah, so just on that, I want to start just briefly about the cross country scene over there and NCAA, maybe more so, but it's probably truly not comprehensible from particularly the runners around the Brisbane scene. Maybe, I guess, to a degree for those down in Victoria, as you probably know. And so it's a far bigger scene down there, but it's just next level over in America, isn't it?
Oh yeah, 100%. It's very intimidating when you're standing on the start line and you've got 350 guys. And this was the case at the pre-nationals meet, which was actually in Madison. And the slowest guy on the field might be like a 14:30 guy, for 5K. And the fastest guys are running 13 low. I don't think there's anyone currently who's run sub 13 in the NCAA. But yeah, no, it's definitely pretty crazy. Would go through the first K pretty often in like 2:45, and I'd be 150th on the grass, which is pretty nuts to think about. That's obviously pretty quick.
Yeah, I think another way of explaining it too, from what I can see, is the finish area and the proximity that you are often to runners, like literally on you or behind you or in front of you, that last couple hundred meters and the fans. It's just crazy. Those finish shoots look, you will know better than I do about how many numbers might fit in, say, within like 30 seconds to a minute of each other. Can it be like, what, tens, hundreds?
Oh yeah, so at same race that I kind of was talking about, the pre-nationals at Wisconsin, I came 129th running 24:08 for 8K on 8K cross country on a pretty hilly course. So 3 minute Ks, and I think 7 seconds in front of me would have been like 90th.
Wow.
So yeah, so it's pretty crazy what's going on over here at the moment, and I'm definitely very blessed to find myself in a really good setup and with a really good coach, because it's definitely the place to be as a junior. I'm trying to obviously take the sport as far as I can.
Absolutely, Mason. We'll get there shortly and more formally about your training experience there. Excuse me. But yeah, on the note of you're talking about sub 13s or 14s for that matter, more accurately over there. But we had a sub 14 here just a week ago in the 5K Queensland Champs on the track at QE2. And none other than Churchy Old Boy, Charlie Moore, Brisbane Athletics athlete too, Jaden Russ's athlete. And I'll take no credit for any improvement really in Charlie, but I can claim that I was around as a coach, the head coach of Churchy when he went through there. And he's just come leaps and bounds since he started there in year nine, I think, and was sort of running around a 320 to 30 pace for maybe a 5K, which they don't do in school, but just for the listeners to understand where he's come from. And now he's running sub three. So yeah, Charlie, Jaden, and that group have done remarkably well, haven't they?
100%, and know Charlie pretty well. Really good lad. He's just so natural. Like when he runs, he just kind of looks like he belongs there. And he's got the body type down pat. And but what I really like about Charlie is he's also just a not just a really good bloke, but he's he doesn't take it too serious, which is something I really need to take a leaf out of his book. He definitely is a very relaxed guy, and he definitely rubs off when you're the right way, in terms of that, where he's a teenager still having fun, that kind of stuff. And I think sometimes a lot of people get too fixated on running and doing everything you can, but sometimes, like in his case, he's just going out and having fun.
Yeah, and potentially, well, I definitely think he's going to improve, but he's sort of running around 80K, I think, a week. And
Yeah.
yeah, when you and I chatted last time, and I think it's pretty well renowned around so some circles, I guess, in Brisbane of how much mileage you've done, ebbed and flowed, I guess. Even back in sort of year 10, you were hitting, well, over 100K or something, weren't you? Like trying crazy things. You went backwards, and now you're sort of, as I mentioned, ebbed and flowed with that high mileage testing out different things. So it'll be interesting to see where Charlie heads. I honestly think he's still got some physical growth to do. Like he may even get
Oh,
tall,
yeah.
fill out a bit more. Not that he wanted to fill out too much, but just get a bit more stronger with experience. And I'm sure he's one to watch. Heading to almost over to your way, Villanova, at least in America.
Yeah. So he was actually going to go to Tennessee, which is in the same state as me. But their coach had left, so he was supposed to actually be over here this semester. But he pushed everything back, which I think was in hindsight a really smart decision. You know, get back to training. Obviously, what he's doing with Rusty's working. So yeah, I'm very happy for him. And yeah, hopefully, I need to make sure I keep a step ahead of him. Don't want to lose to him when he comes over here. So,
That's fantastic. Speaking of that 5K, another well-known athlete, Tim Vincent, paced Charlie for I think about the first 3K of the event. I was lucky enough to run about an hour before these guys in the slowest heat of the 5K, and I love that the slowest heat has me in there at 17 minutes. It kind of shows the depth now in Queensland too, how much faster it's getting. But Tim Vincent was that pacer in that in the A grade, and he'd basically was trying to pace not necessarily Charlie, but just those front guys to as close as 14 and sub as he can. And we've just seen Tim also 209 marathon guy as well over in Frankfurt. I spoke to him the other week on the
Oh,
pod,
yeah.
so he's just getting fitter and fitter, and obviously just such a generous thing to come out and pay some of these young guys too.
100%. And what I really like about Tim Vincent and his kind of like running journeys, it gives you a bit of hope, which yeah, you know, he wasn't like the best runner out of high school, and he's had this kind of steady progression over the years. And now he's at a point now where it's like, you know, he's a pro runner, you know, he's 209 marathoner, 61.5. Like, definitely for someone like my age, who I don't think I was, you know, that great out of high school, but just knowing that, you know, if you stick with it and you train smart, you can get to those high levels, which, you know, a lot of people probably don't think they can get to.
Yeah, completely agree. And the marathon's something probably you'll touch on later in life. But as we speak about the marathon itself, you would have seen the Sydney Marathon too being called a major. And away from you not having run that marathon more formally, I'm sure you're happy about that in the country, the capital of Australia being named alongside many of those great events out there over the world.
100%, and it's running's obviously booming right now, especially in Australia. Run clubs are everywhere, and people are getting rounded. And having a major here is kind of what I pretty similar gist to what I said about Tim is it gives the young guys. It's like, all right, well, we've got something very local. We've got a marathon. We've got a world major, which is going to bring in the best guys in the world, and that rubs off on you. I always take so much away from, you know, something like the Gold Coast Marathon over the last few years when I've been in the elite area, and you know, you're just around all these like absolutely fantastic runners, and you know, learning what they're doing pre-race. And yeah, so I think it's gonna be a great opportunity for a lot of the domestic guys to, you know, get a bit more of that international experience without having to leave the country.
Yeah, I'm thinking of guys like even Ed Goddard, who's a Sydney local, and it's rare to be an elite runner and be in Sydney, isn't it? Really, like compared to how many are predominantly in the Victorian and Melbourne areas. So someone like him would just pay dividends hugely, wouldn't it, to have these massive groups? And obviously you can throw all sorts of names in there as well, hey.
Yeah, no, I know Ed really well, and I actually was speaking to him about it not long ago, and he's yeah super excited. He's the marathon for him's been a bit like hit or miss. He's been super consistent, but he's kind of looking for that breakthrough. And from what he was telling me, I think he's ready to rip at Sydney, and yeah, try and get that breakthrough. He always hangs it out and sees what happens. He always goes out swinging. So, no, super excited to see the Sydney local attack some of those hills.
Yeah, it should be very interesting next year. And I've just seen Melbourne sold out very quickly the other day here. Well, to anyone really that was open to register. And Gold Coast coming up Monday. So for those who do manage to listen to this podcast, get on Gold Coast as quickly as you can, because it's going to go even faster than this year, I think. And as you alluded to, the running boom. playing a massive part of that. But let's move back to you. And for those who never listened to your first episode, we spoke at length about various things. And one thing was about just you as a person and you're running PBs and achievements. We may have a few updates. I just can't think of any on the top of my head to some of those PBs, Hanso. But yeah, just run us through about a few things about you. I know you're obviously massively into running and YouTubing here and there when you can fit that in. But yeah, just college life and what's been happening since the last year and a half that we spoke.
Yeah, it's been honestly, if you had spoken to me back then when we filmed the original podcast and said, like, this is what's going to happen, you're going to run these times that I have, like, I wouldn't have believed you. And I owe a lot to it, my dedication, just kind of sticking through and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm pretty regular on the socials and the Instagram. And for me, that's a way of, I want to take running as far as I can, and I want to make it my job. So trying to set myself up any way I can to do that. And obviously social media is a billion-dollar industry, and I just want to tap into that a lot. So yeah, upload a bunch of content about my training. I'm a sports science student, so I study that over at Lipscomb University. So since our original interview, I transferred. A bunch of reasons why, but the gist of it was I kind of came over on a limb and took the first kind of opportunity I got, and then I kind of was able to almost upgrade, which has been great. Since we spoke, I'd run 3:57 in the 1500. Now I've run 3:47, so a 10-second jump. In the 3K, I went from 8:27 to 8:17. But in that race, I actually won our conference. In the 3K, I beat a pretty decent Kenyan who's 27 years old, who's run 13:50 for 5K. So that was one of my crowning achievements, and something I'm going to look back on forever. And 5K, I've run 14:10. So that was a 33-second PB from last time we spoke. And wow, Recently, we just had the cross-country season where I had a very solid season. I ran 23:57 for 8K cross country on the grass. So, yeah, that was what the season has just happened, and where I just took a break and I'm building up for indoor and outdoor track.
Awesome, mate. So, yeah, so what I've gathered from you in what I, you know, I've known you really probably more closely for 2 or 3 years, but known of you for longer than that, is like, you're a real learner, like in this sport. You know, there's many runners out there that that enjoy it and run at a level similar or quicker than you. But where does this like real like knack for just wanting to get better and better and learn more about the sport come from, even away from running, like academically or parent influence or anything like that?
Yeah, for me, it's just doing everything I can to be the best runner I can. And I think for me, that's by trying to gather as much information as I can about the sport. And what's so interesting about sports science is it's always evolving. And what was the in thing 5 years ago is completely changed now. And I'm really into kind of the using lactate as using it to control intensity in comparison to heart rate. There's a lot of stuff about how like lactate guided training has kind of been the new thing, and I've been trialing with that out. So yeah, I think for me it's just I love running, and I'm also kind of, I probably got some ADHD in there as well. So
is it some kind of addictive thing?
it kind of comes a thing where it's once you start learning about it and you start. You've got so many different aspects of running as well, with like the nutrition side, the supplements, the strength work, within the strength work, you got, stuff with like plyometrics and how the, yeah, there's just so much that's always going through my mind about ways I can get better, because I don't think I'm the most naturally talented guy ever, but if there's one thing I can have over someone who's more talented than me, it's that I'm going to work harder and hopefully I can work smarter.
Yeah. And on the flip side too, like in contrast to the real learning and disciplined Matt Hanso, is that, you're quite a character and opinionated in certain ways, and And you know, you're into the fashion and changing how you look and how you train and putting content out there. Like that, that must, is that just a way to sort of break up the, I guess, monotonous and serious nature that running can bring at times?
100%. It's kind of like my out, and I like to express myself. And I liked something I didn't like about the sport when I first got into it is how secretive everything is, and how like everyone's a bit touchy to say something. And where I don't know, maybe it's the way I was brought up, or I think just being I feel like Brisbane, not that Brisbane's rough around the edges, but the guys I'm hanging out with, you say what you're thinking, and you don't hold back. And I've always kind of been like that, which potentially can be a downfall sometimes, but I think I'm getting better, as you kind of mentioned, like learning how to use that to my advantage. And I think like the social media stuff is great for that. Being a bit controversial does get you more clicks. It's classic. It's been around since magazines, and if you're controversial, you're probably gonna get a bit more, a few more clicks, a few more engagements. And I don't know, if you truly believe in it as well, then I have no problem trying to back up anything I say most of the time.
Well, let's get to some of those opinions. Obviously, one of them is the lactate and threshold training. Before I get there, one opinion to throw out. This, I guess, is a bit of a throwaway random comment that I'm putting at you ad hocly, but in the Facebook message of ours with the Burke guys about do you remember commenting on the running drills, like running drills before
Oh
a
yeah.
workout or a race, and you pretty much just said running drills are useless. So what are you, like, in all seriousness, like, what are your thoughts on drills? Because, like, even I've got a bit of a contrast of view of them, specifically before a workout or a race.
Yeah, I if I've got so much energy to put elsewhere, I'm not putting it in drills. I don't think drills have zero place, but I'd much prefer run for an extra 10 minutes than doing 10 minutes of drills. Or before a workout, I would say there's, instead of spending those 5 10 minutes on drills, I'll do a 5 minute threshold, because that's gonna increase my VO2 kinetics, so I can engage my aerobic system quicker, where drills aren't gonna do that. If there's a form thing with drills, I don't know. I feel like most of the time for me, I'm practicing form, and when I'm doing strides and when I'm doing sprints and stuff like that. So I just don't really see a place for them in training personally.
Yeah, well, let's stay here for a little bit because, my concern is that drills between the jogging part and the actual race or workout, when they're placed in between there, that heart rate can really lower, and I think that you can
Yes.
almost reverse the benefits of the actual jog itself. But even better, as you just had mentioned, that threshold warm up, and I've been trying that on and off the last few months. I just think it's fantastic, and wonder, like, hey, you were saying, like, even in the last 5 years, how things have changed. Like, why haven't we done this for longer? Like, I think a lot of runners have sort of done a warm up where you build from a slower pace to a quicker pace, but certainly not like throwing out, 3, 4, 5 minutes of threshold work before, say, a 5K.
100%, yeah. And it's wild, because we've actually known about this for years. The original study, they did it with 800 meter runners, and it was in the early 2000s, where they got one group to do a hard 200 at 800 meter pace 10 minutes before the race, and one group didn't, and it was a 2 second performance benefit just from doing like a harder 200 10 minutes before. So we've known this for a while. It's and the mechanism, the VO2 kinetics, where you're basically just activating your aerobic system, so you're not burning up as much of that anaerobic system early on in the race. So you can kind of distribute that later when you need to. Obviously, when we're finishing a race, we want to have that kick. We want to have that finish with us. And sometimes, like, physiologically, there's nothing you can really do if you've already spent all your bickies early.
Yeah, so talking about, let's say a runner starts their warm up at 100 beats per minute, or 110, whatever that may be, going from, say, that to 160, and instead of doing that, we're throwing that threshold in, and we're now at starting at, say, 130 to 40, for example. Is that what you're sort of saying? That spike isn't as great, not shocking the systems of the body too much?
Yeah, not shocking the system. Yeah, pretty much just it's just priming big and in a sport where we're predominantly relying on that. That's super, super crucial. So yeah, like to be honest, if people want to, if drills are a must, like you can go drills and then go into the tempo. I would time that tempo threshold, like 10 to 20 minutes before the race is ideal, ideal timing for that. So you've obviously still got some time in between if you want to do some, silly high knees or something like that.
Sure. Let's on going back into training, sorry, and talk about a few more topics because the threshold and lactate stuff has been on your agenda in training for maybe around a year now. And how does that fit into what you do, particularly with the college training, like around any group training or coached training that you do at the moment?
Definitely a different setup. So when I was at my old school, I was pretty much training by myself. So I obviously had a lot more control over the intensity where coach will give us, splits he wants us to hit. And then that's kind of like the expectation. But the really cool thing about my coach is he actually worked at USA Track and Field as an exercise scientist. So he's a big fan of this kind of way of training. It's just obviously when you've got we have 25 guys on the men's cross country team and we have 20 on the women's side, so you've got 45 athletes. Like you can't lactate test everyone, but he will kind of tell me to speed up, slow down, maintain based on the lactate readings in the session. Or it could even be as easy as if I was leading a rep and I tested too high my lactate, I just go sit, at the back of the group for that next rep, try and recover as much as I can. And so yeah, even though I am training with a group, it's still definitely kind of pretty heavily reliant on what their kind of lactate readings telling me, but also like how I feel and my heart rate and my how I'm breathing also plays into it. But the lactate is obviously the easiest thing to measure.
Yeah, let's talk about the numbers though. So like, and I generally ask this for me, but also the listeners. And as you'd probably agree, testing lactate won't always be for everybody. And there's a few reasons for that, like predominantly like financially and logistically is the other one I'm thinking of. Like how do you sort of make sure you're checking the lactate through the session not to be a detriment to the actual session? And then what are the numbers actually mean? Is there some kind of scale you can kind of give us about where you're sitting when you see these numbers?
100%. So lactate testing, it's pretty easy to do in the rest period. So if you have anywhere from a minute to 2 minutes and you've kind of got a little bit of practice with it, like it takes 15 seconds to get a result and maybe like, 15 to 30 seconds to prick my finger and make sure I prepare the sample. So I don't find it detrimental. Sometimes it can be a little bit stressful and you can accidentally stress yourself out and raise your heart rate, but that's only happened to me. I think I can only think of twice where I've accidentally like missed the start of a rep or something like that. So, and to be honest, if I was training by myself, I wouldn't stress at all. Like if I took extra recovery, it's fine. The thing about threshold is like that extra recovery, like it really doesn't matter. All it's going to do is allow you to, it might take slightly longer to get back to threshold, but that's the point of kind of like threshold intervals in a way. And then the numbers. So everyone's got, much like how everyone's got an individual heart rate, everyone's got an individual lactate profile. So everyone's numbers will mean different things. But over the time, I've been lactate testing for about a year now. You do kind of get a really good gauge of what the reading means. So the classic kind of, if you had like a very stereotypical distance runner, their first threshold, so LT1, will be at about 2 millimoles, and their second threshold will be about 4 millimoles. When you do a lactate test, you can actually kind of pinpoint your exact kind of thresholds. So for me, my first threshold sits between 2 and 2.2 millimoles, and my second threshold between 2.8 and 3.2 millimoles. So whenever I get a reading, based on the goal of the session, I will adjust accordingly, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And is it important then to actually get a like a proper lactate test, say on a treadmill in a very controlled environment to understand those numbers as well?
So, treadmill or on the track, and making sure you have a correct protocol. So if you're doing a lactate test, you need at least to be doing 4 to 8 minute intervals with very short recovery. And that should give you a pretty valid test. But the thing with lactate testing is the lactate test can only tell you so much. You've also got to make correlations from the testing you do within training. So for me, I can't be lactate testing every week, which you'd kind of have to do if you wanted to have a, 100% accurate feel for your lactate profile. So for me, it's also taking into account what I'm testing consistently in training, basing that with the heart rate and basing that with like how I'm actually feeling in the session. So yeah, it can be a bit of a, it's almost like an art to a certain extent, because you've kind of got to have a really good gauge of what the results mean and correlate them with a bunch of other factors.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about the actual threshold itself and the definition of it. Yeah, how that looks pace-wise or effort-wise away from those numbers and any kind of double thresholding if that's the thing that you're doing. Because I, funny story, I had a mate, I won't say his name to save the embarrassment, but a mate of mine the other morning after quite a firm threshold run said as a joke he was going to double up in the arvo like Matt Hansen. I said, mate, if Aussies do a double threshold in that capacity, and for us, it's often, 20 to 30 minutes at that about half marathon pace, and particularly in summer as well, to go and do that again, the arvo, I think, is a bit much. So with this
Oh, yeah.
threshold that we're talking about over there and even alluding to the Norwegian approach, it's a little bit more mild, isn't it?
Yeah, so yeah. With threshold, like that first threshold, your LT1, your aerobic threshold, like that is a very kind of easy pace. And a lot of people, especially new runners, like they won't have a zone below their aerobic threshold. Like as soon as they start running, they're already in that kind of zone. So for me, with the threshold model, the pace and the effort is always going to be based on how long the rep is. So if you're doing like an aerobic threshold session, you might be doing something like, 4 by 10 minutes or something like that. So you obviously you'd be running that at a higher a faster pace than you would if you're doing 40 minutes straight, if you know what I mean. So it's always going to be based on that. But I'd say aerobic threshold, you should be able to pretty much speak. It's going to feel It should be around that like 90 minutes to 2 hour pace, if you were to have to hold it in a race, or at least you have that feeling. So when you're doing those 10 minute reps, for example, you have to know that like, okay, if someone told me I had to go for another rep without recovery, like I would be fine. That should be kind of like the thinking where your LT2, your lactate, your anaerobic threshold, that's your classic like what people say, like half marathon pace, or that pace you can hold for, 40 minutes to an hour. But same thing, that's always going to be relative to the distance of the rep, or the duration of the rep. So a classic session we would do would be a 3200 meter, a 1600 meter, a 3200 meter, and then we'd do 3 by 1600 meter. So it's about 13K worth of volume. And for us, we'd be running that at 3:10 to 3:15 pace, which I ran a half marathon, which was around 69 flat. So that's obviously right around that pace. But if I was doing 400s, I might be running 3 minute pace. I obviously can't hold that for a half, but because the duration and the distance the rep is shorter, I can run faster.
Yeah, it makes sense. And because yeah, if you just use the word threshold, it can be dangerous, can't it? You
100%.
and I have been privy to runners that we know of, particularly in Australia or Brisbane for that matter, who are just going at that too hard. But yeah, one way I guess is measuring the lactate. But how on earth do you get a hold of these? And is it a lactate meter? What are they called? And where do you buy them?
Yeah, so lactate meter, there's a few places in Australia you can buy them from. I forget what the website called. It's Hab something. They sell the one I have. It's called the Accuray Lactate Pro 2. But there's also another model called the Lactate Plus, which you should be able to buy a whole rig for probably about $600, which sounds ridiculous, but For me, it was definitely just an investment into being able to control the intensities more, because the thing with threshold is it's super easy to fall outside of these zones. And you kind of touched on it before. We know plenty of people who sprint their thresholds, and all they're doing is making themselves more fatigued. And for what? They're not getting any more benefit. It's called a threshold for a reason. Like, a threshold is once you cross that threshold, you're going to be in a different zone. You're going to get a completely different stimulus than what you're kind of after. And for someone like myself, who I think that mileage and overall volume is also kind of something all runners should be kind of looking to do, or is, kind of run the most mileage they can, taking into effect other stresses, general life stresses, family, work, whatever. So that's obviously going to look different for everyone else. But if you don't recover, you're not going to be able to do volume, which is, I guess, like the whole point of distance training, is you want as much volume, as much aerobic volume, as much aerobic stimulus as you can.
Yeah, for sure. And keeping you there in terms of mileage, like what are you hitting at the moment? Has that sort of differed through the cross country season over there? And for those who don't know much about cross country here in Brisbane, it's a different ball game, particularly from the road. Obviously, the number one factor for cross country is you're on grass, but the other thing that can come with that is the elevation and mud and terrain as well. So yeah, what's your sort of weekly mileage, and how do those threshold sessions actually fit in that week for you, Hanso?
100%. So I've probably averaged about 170K a week for the cross country season. So it's obviously quite a lot of running. I went as high as 195, and I went kind of as low as about 140. I guess, yeah, it's 8K and 10K cross country. So those being longer events, definitely push the volume a bit more. During the track season, I'll probably sit more around 145 to 160. So it'll drop down a little bit as the intensity creeps up a bit. And the threshold sessions for us, we do Tuesday is our double threshold day. So that'll be about 20K worth of threshold running in that day. Plus obviously warm up, cool down, all that kind of stuff. And then for us, Friday is gonna be it's gonna be a threshold session mixed in with some I guess some faster intervals. So a bit more like what would be like a classic session, or a classic like kind of interval session. But I guess the joys of doing two sessions a week, and also using threshold effectively, is we can add volume to the Friday interval session by, we might do some threshold to begin with, so we can kind of warm up, and then we might do some threshold at the end. There's been a lot of I guess evidence coming out that running at this threshold intensity, especially that aerobic threshold, after a hard effort, can actually lower your lactate, which if you finish the session with a lactate of say like 11 millimoles, which is very high, if you do a thre if you do some threshold at the end, you might drop it down to 3 millimoles, and then from there, you're obviously going to be able to recover better from the session.
Are you able to talk us through like your just a split through the week when you're like doing certain things like your session threshold and long run, and how your jogging works in between those three runs?
100%. So for me, yeah, training, we have a definitely a very different approach. And using this kind of threshold model, we can do a lot more intensity. So throughout these days, what you're going to notice is that it kind of seems that like 5 of the 7 days of the week are workouts, but there is some trick to it. If you control the intensity like I do, then you can manage it. And I've been able to manage it really well. So Monday, I'll usually double in the morning. So my doubles will probably most likely be anywhere from 6 to 8K on average. So when I say a double, that's what I'm going to refer to. Then Monday afternoon, I usually do an easy run. So usually about 60 minutes, and then either 5 by 150 meter builds. So the builds are starting at 3K pace and then working through the gears. So going, 3K pace, 1500 pace, and then like 800 meter pace. And those are on a 250 meter jog recovery. Or sometimes I'll have 6 to 8 by 200 at about my 3K pace of 100 meters jog. So that's almost like a mini session in itself. Tuesday is going to be a classic double threshold day. The big thing for me at the moment that's changed is I'll usually do, I said before, I do about 20K worth of threshold that day, but the split is probably about, 13 to 14K of threshold in the morning, and then coming back in the afternoon with a slightly shorter session. In the morning will be longer reps. So I'll usually do any like mile repeats or 2 mile repeats, something like that. And in the afternoon, I'm usually doing either 200 meters or 400 meters at threshold. 200 meters at threshold are a super interesting, I guess, thing I've been doing recently. I obviously it's like, how can you run a 200 meter rep at threshold? But what it allows you to do is, running a 200 at threshold, you can run 3K pace and be at threshold if you're only doing 200 meters. So you're still getting that kind of biomechanical, I guess, aspect to it where you're running faster. You're potentially also recruiting more of those fast twitch muscle fibers, which obviously, you still need a. You can train the system, the energy system, as much as you want, but if you're musculoskeletally, if you can't follow suit, then you're gonna be in trouble. So, that's usually what we do Tuesday. Wednesday is full recovery day, so I'll probably just double easy run. Thursday, in the morning we do kind of similar to Monday. It'll be like a 60-minute run, and then we usually do hill reps. So we do about 6 to 8 by 200-meter hill, off a jog down recovery. And those are usually pretty hard. That's probably my least favorite run of the week. I'm not very powerful, so hills are definitely kind of like my kryptonite. I'll double Thursday as well. Friday is going to be our specific workout. So in cross country, that will be obviously a cross country workout where we'll go to the cross country course and we'll do a variety of sessions. We've done a session we did was like 12 by 1K and 2 by 400. We've also done, we've done like a 600-meter hill session. So that'll vary a lot. During the track season, that'll be like the classic interval session. And I kind of touched on it before. We also add a bit of threshold into that workout just to get a bit more volume. Saturday, recovery day. So same thing as Wednesday. And then Sunday, the long run, which has probably been the biggest change for me, honestly. I usually do 18-mile long runs now, which is about 29K, so about right around 2 hours, which is definitely quite a long way, but I've been enjoying them. And a big thing for me is fueling. So I pretty much take a gel. Anything longer than 60 minutes, I'm taking a gel on it.
Yeah, so those long runs, what sort of a pace are they at? Do you try and include the hills with those as well?
So we have a few different long run locations in Nashville. One of them is quite hilly, and the other one's quite flat. But when we go on the hills, we usually get rolling up them, so we'll run pretty hard for the long run. I usually average about 4-minute Ks, I would say, on average for those. And then when we're on the flat, we can sometimes get rolling and average like 350s for that run. So definitely a pretty tough way to end the week.
Yeah, so you're pretty content with your Mondays, though, as in recovering enough for the Tuesday then. That's a concern sometimes, isn't it, for runners out there running those long runs too long or hard?
100%, and it's definitely been something that it was kind of why I mentioned at the end there that like that fueling aspect during the long run. I'll probably take 4 gels, so that's obviously quite a lot of carbs, especially like I'm not training for a marathon or anything like that, so like I don't really need to practice fueling, but fueling is super important for that recovery aspect. So I guess it would be Sunday morning to Monday afternoon. So if you got 36 hours there. Where if you do the right things and you feel during that long run, I've found it fine.
Yeah, and just quickly on recovery, actually, and I'm sure your answer, well, I'm sure I'm pretty certain of how you'll answer this question, but mate, geez, isn't like the ice bath and like sauna and all this extra recovery stuff becoming a bit of a hit and trend out there at the moment in the country? Like, personally, I'm not a huge fan of doing that. You know, the basics are, for me, are far more important first. If you can complement it, sure. But yeah, what's your experience there or opinions?
100%. So I honestly, like, I haven't done like a stretching, like not dynamic. I haven't done static stretching in probably like 2 years now. And I'm probably still more flexible than a lot of runners. I'm doing a lot of like prehab and mobility work. So I guess that is technically dynamic stretches, but you know, I'll do 15, 20 minutes of those before every run, make sure I'm properly warmed up. For me, the sleep aspect has been huge this semester. Every single day, it's like getting to bed at like 8:39, and having a nap during the day. Like I have to, for me, it's like a non-negotiable. Any time I have between class or uni or anything like that, like I'm straight into bed. Trying to get those extra sleep gains. Because yeah, that along with nutrition. And just making sure you get enough fuel in. It's definitely been something for me I think I've struggled with, just not getting enough in potentially. So yeah, that's probably one thing I need to probably focus on a bit more. But yeah, those are the basics. If you hit the basics on the 95%, then you can have fun with the 5%. But for me at the moment, it's like with uni and all the other things in my life, I think just nailing the 95% is just that's enough, like, and that's going to be plenty to make sure I'm recovered.
Yeah, definitely agree on the sleep and the food, and definitely, and lap that up to your age, the napping I'm talking about in the afternoons. That can be hard to come by for full-time workers and parents, but I think we'd all, like, I would definitely go for a nap if I could. It's got to help out, particularly when you're doubling up, and it's just hours, isn't it, sleeping hours. I started to track my sleep on a Garmin on the watch in more recent times. And it's so interesting, isn't it, to find out, you know, it's probably not 100% accurate, but just to find out, you know, time of falling asleep and how long the sleep is, and a bit of insight to some capacity. And yeah, for me as a parent at times, it's not great. And are we looking at aiming for a certain amount of hours for you per night? What do you do there?
Yeah, so I've actually got a Whoop. So yeah, pretty similar. But the Whoop is brutal. Like the Whoop will say sometimes I'm awake for like, you know, 2 hours a night or something. I'm like, I don't remember being awake. But yeah, no, for me, I want to be in bed. So my time in bed at least 8 hours. Because if we're being really brutal, I would say on average, the average person will be awake for 90 minutes of their sleep. So whatever your time in bed is, you can instantly kind of cut 90 minutes away of actually like sleeping time. So, so 8 hours minimum for me. But it's one of those things that there's a condition where I forget the name of it, but it's where people are so stressed about getting sleep that they actually don't sleep. So it has to be an understanding that it's obviously super important, but you can't be, I think I've in the past almost like stressed myself out, but it's, I've got to wake up at this time, and you know, the maths isn't mathing here. I'm not going to have enough time, but it's one of those things that, yeah, it's really not worth stressing about unnecessarily.
Yeah, it's such a complex thing, isn't it, sleep? And it comes usually naturally at best when you aren't thinking about it, ironically. But yeah, away from sleep, and I think it's the probably right time to start talking about this podcast of yours, Hanso. And we're talking about the Trot podcast. Yeah. And you've certainly been on a few too as a guest as well. And I've hosted this one for almost 3 years now. And probably in the last 6 months, I think you've been on a handful, even the last year. But now you've got your own hosting with a couple of mates as well. One of those sort of pods where you're similar kind of set up to the Inside Running podcast, I guess, where you're chatting all things running about yourselves and things happening out there. But also just the American aspect too, because I've tuned in for a bit and certainly been lost at times about the American running, but also enjoying it.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, that's one of those things, a bit more of a passion project where, just able to kind of let loose a little bit, and it's been really good to reflect as well. So it's it's pretty easy just to check training off and not really like think about it and reflect and learn from the week. And I think the podcast has been really good for me for that aspect of it, and hosting with Max Hooper as well. He also trained with Rossi and he's from Brisbane, and it's been good to kind of get because he's a freshman. He's just come over here, so it's cool getting that perspective of it as well. I think kind of both of us kind of growing and learning. And yeah, definitely something we're gonna keep up. And yeah, we're both going to Flagstaff in 2 weeks, so high altitude training. So definitely be some good content on the pod from that.
Yeah, so what's just rewinding there for a little bit, Hans. So what's the inspiration actually for it? Obviously, you just mentioned the learning aspect and reflection part of it, but there's so many out there now, isn't there? Podcasts, and you've got to put Inside Running up there as the almost the founders of a plethora of podcasts that have come out even the last year with this running boom. But yeah, for what sort of influencing factors had the Trot podcast come about?
For me, it was something that I just love listening to podcasts, and I almost wanted to have this kind of mixture between Inside Running podcasts and For the Kudos, where it's like, still gonna be some banter, still gonna be maybe a bit more like Gen Z humor on the podcast, kind of like For the Kudos do. Obviously, they're a bit old these days. Their jokes aren't quite as funny as I think our podcast is, but and then still having that kind of bit more serious, bit more professional side that Inside Running podcast bring. And for me, I would love to have a podcast run by some collegiate runners on a really decent team who are just not leaving any secrets out and just being brutally honest about the state of the sport and what's going on. And because yeah, it's sometimes the pod's in a great spot right now as well, because it's not too big that we can kind of have a bit more freedom of press, where maybe those bigger podcasts these days can't express exactly what they want to express, because it's like
Yeah,
Inside Running
sponsors too.
podcasts gets in trouble sometimes for stuff they said, and they're probably like frayed relationships, but I don't really care about that. I'll tee off on something I don't like, or I don't think's right, or anything like that. So yeah, I think it's a good platform for that.
Yeah, definitely agree with the podcasting world. Like, you can learn so much from it. But on the flip side, too. Is there podcasts out there, even away from running, that you listen to, just thinking like, what is going on here? Like, that are almost uneducating people out there.
Oh yeah. There's like the classic joke right now is the Talk Tour podcast. It's like this girl from Nashville who got famous for some really silly Instagram clip, and now she has a podcast, and it's like kind of a joke that everyone needs to listen to the Talk Tour podcast, even though it's yeah, probably the you're probably gonna lose brain cells listening to it, lose brain function. But yeah, no, I listen to like the Human podcasts and a few of those kind of other I guess like more health and wellness podcasts as well.
Yeah,
Probably my
excellent.
go-to.
Yeah, and how do you guys go for numbers? Like, do you look into the numbers, and they mean much to you, or is it more just about enjoying it? And for those who listen, they can learn a bit.
Yeah, I don't really look at them too much. I've actually given a lot of the I guess the production of the podcast over the Hooper, so Max, the other co-host. But on Podbean, we kind of average about 500 downloads on Podbean an episode. So I don't know what how many Spotify plays it would be, but I would assume about that. So yeah, it goes all right. I think I can get chatting sometimes though, so I need to work on that. Even on this podcast, I've been
No, but you're a
shorter the
guest, mate.
episode.
That's what you're meant to be doing on a podcast if you're the guest. And what? How many? So, what's your total at? How many podcasts have you been on the other side of the microphone?
Oh, it'd at least be in double figures now.
Oh, is it?
I the one thing is I never say no to a podcast request. I think it's one of those things. It's any publicity is a good publicity, and you kind of work your way up. Like obviously being on this like 18 months ago was big, and then I was on a podcast recently with it's really bad that I forget the podcast I was on,
What
but I was
Trail
that
Kings?
Trail Kings is a pretty big one. But also that one was pretty funny. But this other one was with these two trail runners from Sydney. I think it's called Better Stride, but they have I think like 4,000 3,000 followers on Instagram, so they're a pretty big pod. So yeah, no, it's Yeah, I think it allows me to speak my truth and get my story out there, which hopefully just, gets more people kind of engaged in what I'm doing and kind of interested in seeing the journey because I'm very transparent.
Yeah, that's absolutely a big reason why I love it too. And definitely noticed in the running world too. And maybe because it's just we're less professional as well as other sports, but also just the people within it. Hey, like I can't recall someone knocking back a podcast. And for whatever reason, I often will sort of throw the idea out there that it's okay to say no. But maybe I just need to just ask them a bit more directly. But yeah, so generous runners with their time. And like you said, I'm sure that it's an opportunity for them to talk about what they love. And talking about love and passion and running, let's get to your future running, Hanso, in the short term over there, but also, yeah, the next couple of years. What are you thinking?
Yeah, so just at the moment, kind of all eyes on the track season. We've got indoor track and then outdoor. Man, I really want to break 40 in the 5K. I think I'm more than capable.
Charlie's got you
I've run,
angry.
yeah, exactly. If he can run that solo for the last 2K, then why can't I? Nah, but it's I'm gonna have some really good opportunities at some really big meets. So it's taking the most of them. I would love to run as close to sub 29 in the 10K as possible. That would be a huge jump and for me, and obviously once you kind of get it, once you're a 28 minute guy, like you're definitely up there in Australia, which is somewhere I think I can be. So I guess talking like post college, like I want to go professional. I've still got kind of 2 to 3 more years over here of hopefully developing and learning. So if that means I run professionally back home or over here, I'm open to either. But I think worst case, like I'm always going to be running. It might just mean I after college I go straight into the half and the marathon because that's what I love. Like I the track's all fun and all that, but the roads is just super electric. And I kind of started running on the roads with Parkrun and stuff like that. So definitely feels like that's my spiritual home, perhaps.
Yeah, and do you ever think about like, are there certain like l levels that you can get down to, so to speak, like that you think, oh, like I'll never get quicker than that, but I'll give it a crack? Or are you someone that thinks that you're just going to try and get better and better and sort of see what happens? Like you're only sort of a couple of years out of school, right? And you're talking to
Yeah.
someone who's been out there for 10 to 15 years running, who, like for me, I know my ability very well and truly now, and have certain times in mind, say for 5K, that I think I could get to. Is that how you operate, or do you just want to keep going at it and see where you end up?
The truthful answer is I'm definitely a pessimist at heart. Like I definitely understand that I probably have some limits just given my lack of potentially like raw speed, where my leg speed is probably, yeah, not quite as fast. But so potentially that might mean I might not be the best 1500 runner. But I think in the 5K and the 10K, like I don't see there's no reason why I can't get as low as, low, like, 13:20 or something like that, and in the 10K, like, if you can run 13:20, 13:30 in a 5K, like you can definitely be like a, 28 low, 27 high guy. So, and that's getting you places, like that's getting on Australian teams and stuff like that as well. So, I definitely think I'm capable. My body's feeling great at the moment, and I'm 20, and I'm still progressing. So yeah, I would like to think that anything is possible.
Yeah, I'd love to be 20 again and in your shoes. So, mate, make the most of it. Any events you can inform the Brisbane listeners of that are going to be attended to next year in this country, or is it all American for that next short-term period of your
No, 100%.
life?
I would love to do lawn session again. So go do lawn session, and I'd also love to I'm gonna do Sandgate, and then
Yes.
maybe state cross country. I guess that would be my yeah, and probably just a few more other races potentially. Something like a Rebound Club have got some great events coming up. They've yeah, I'm not going to give away too much. You have to get Ken on the podcast, but yeah, he's definitely got some really good ideas, which I've been talking to him about different events. So I'll be heavily involved with those.
Oh, I'd love to, mate, if you can get a good word in for me. But and you definitely had a phase there of what was that, started this year, like just doing heaps of these rebound events and becoming a bit of a pin-up boy for someone who's more renowned for just the traditional road races.
Yeah, no, and I think it's such a cool concept that they've done with a lot of these like secret races and stuff like that. And I always get around just cool events, which Kent always seems to and the Rebound Club always seem to put on.
Awesome, mate. Well, I think we might leave it there. If I'm correct, it's 5 minutes to 10 p.m. over where you are. I didn't actually clarify which part of America I think you were located in at this very moment at the start. Where are you?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville, Tennessee, almost 10 p.m. So appreciate your time. You were talking about your bedtime earlier and you're well and truly past that. So appreciate it. And yeah, every time we chat, mate, we'll have a run and talk about running it. Seems like we can talk forever, and that I'm talking to someone closer to my age in their 30s about the sports. I can't imagine what you're going to be like if you continue with this for hopefully forever. But we'll see what happens in the next, yeah, sort of 6 months to a year, and maybe get you back on for a third time.
Yeah, love to come back on with the same attitude. We've just had this massive breakthrough again. So yeah, let's hopefully 18 months time, I'll be a 13-30 guy, and we can chat again.
Oh, geez, you heard it here first. I'll hold you to that. And thanks again, mate.
No, thank you so much for having me on.
Cheers.